just watched Luis Severino's Major League debut, and it was pretty enjoyable. I'm Andrew Marantz here with Matt Provenzano. I was about to say Luis Severino, but I don't think Luis Severino is on this podcast.
That'd be a good get.
So I'm Andrew Marantz here with Matt Ferencik and Matt Provenzano, and not Luis Severino. He is not on this podcast, at least.
That would have been a good get.
Yeah, we got him in the post game.
He like steps like locker room stuff. It's just I didn't know, guys. I gotta go do a podcast.
Guys, I gotta go do the Pinstripe Valley podcast. I give him my word, you know. But I mean, we'll get straight into it. I thought the start was pretty solid. 5 innings, 7 strikeouts, only 1 earned run. The other one scored on because Headley kind of screwed up and let the inning continue. And only 2 hits. Just unfortunate that one of them brought the error home and the other one was hit by David Ortiz 440 feet. But, you know, David Ortiz just does those things. So, I mean, I thought it was pretty good. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it was really enjoyable. I mean, it ended a little earlier than I liked his pitch count, but I don't know. That'll happen sometimes.
Yeah, I didn't expect him to go too much further than the 95 pitches that he was in the game for, so...
It's kind of wise. It was about what I expected, but I just wish it could have gotten more innings, but... Eh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe if Headley doesn't make that error, then they get out of the inning, and he can last into the 6th or something like that, but I guess that's just what happens sometimes.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting watching him in spring training and now watching him now and sort of seeing the improvement. Because I know that, at least in spring training, the command was all over the place. Couldn't throw strikes, couldn't throw his fastball. And now, you see the change looks a little bit more solidified, and the command is definitely not there, but it's like definitely coming along. Like you definitely see a lot of progression over the past, you know, 5 months.
I kind of got the same sense that, like, in spring training, I guess you could tell he was a bit more raw. I mean, again, that's kind of natural from someone who had, like, just turned 21 in February, but you could sort of see how he's developed in AA and AAA over the course of the season into a much more complete pitcher, so it's pretty helpful. So yeah, Luis Severino, he's good at pitching. Yay. Good to get validation of that.
And also good validation that they didn't trade him for half a season of David Price.
Yeah, and I mean, David Price could have done pretty much what Severino did. I mean, maybe he wouldn't have given a home run to Ortiz, but maybe he would have. But either way, the Yankees just weren't hitting the knuckleball tonight, so other than the one Carlos Beltran solo homer. So, not exactly a whole bunch. But, so it goes. I mean, the fact that Severino pitched pretty well is a good sign for the Yankees going forward. I mean, they do need someone to take that spot vacated by Michael Pineda. And that was really unfortunate that, you know, just right before the trade deadline, it's like, oh, by the way, Michael Pineda is going to be out for pretty much all of August and probably a little bit more. Good luck managing for the rest of the month with Masahiro Tanaka and a bunch of question marks. So.
Yeah, it was kind of a surprise because, you know, he's had problems, you know, with his shoulder, but didn't really expect something sort of like a flexor problem. But at the same time, it's not as bad as it could have been.
No.
Because that could have been much, much worse. That could have definitely been the classic forearm strain to Tommy John surgery. And then like, basically, his whole career is almost ruined. Because it's very difficult to come back from shoulder rehab and then elbow rehab and the whole thing. It would have just been terrible. So I'm crossing my fingers that it has nothing to do with his UCL.
Yeah, I mean, the Yankees are pretty fortunate that they news came out and it was just like, okay, it's just I think it was a grade 1 strain, which I'm pretty sure is the same thing that Andrew Miller had earlier in the season.
Yeah.
So, at least it's something lesser that they can work through, and ideally Pineda will be back sometime in September, but in the meantime, they're going to have to make do with the rotation as is, and it's very uneasy right now, and that's where, like, this is the chance that the Yankees took when they decided at the deadline that they were going to settle for Dustin Ackley, who, you know, is obviously already on the DL, and nothing else.
Seattle knew.
Seattle knew. That's it. They just, it was all a plot to get Jose Ramirez in the Mariners' bullpen.
In both cases, still with the Pineda trade, Seattle still knew.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They still were very aware of Pineda's elbow.
Ramon Flores, Jose Ramirez, and Jesus Montero are going to be part of the new Core Four.
Don't forget, oh, I was going to say don't forget Abe Almonte, but they already traded him away. The coup from the Sean Kelly trade.
Whoever they do it for, Ichiro.
Oh, Danny Farquhar.
Oh, yeah, him.
Yeah, there you go. He's their Mariano Rivera.
You know someone else in that?
DJ Mitchell.
Yeah, he was a person.
He's, I think he's out of organized baseball right now.
I'm sure someone complained when that trade happened, though.
DJ Mitchell is pitching for the Bridgeport Bluefish in the Indy League.
Yeah.
I think I actually saw him pitch on,
Nice.
On Sunday.
The Mighty Ducks. That was not even a pun. I didn't mean not mean to do that.
Yeah. That league is just filled with those types. I saw him, JC Romero, Rich Hill.
Alright. That's...
We don't want to get on the rabbit hole of Atlantic players.
Yeah, it's true. We don't need to go into an episode of Where in the World's DJ Mitchell's Posse. But, I mean, it is a little disappointing that the Yankees didn't add any starters, but, you know, for what they would have had to give up, it's understandable. It's tough to go through, but because especially right now, because the rotation is Tanaka, Severino, Eovaldi, missing someone other than Sabathia, who's the fourth one.
Nova
and Sabathia, and Sabathia is just like at this point, I expect something bad like four times out of five, and that's really sad.
I can't even imagine him finishing his contract. They're going to have to cut him eventually.
Yeah, that's going to be super awkward. It's like, ooh, Yankees DFA, CC Sabathia. Ooh. But that's not happening until, like, 2017, probably.
I mean, it'll basically become like a Barry Zito situation.
Mm-hmm. Like, they still have a full... They have all of next year, for sure. And they're... And so they're not going to cut him before then. And then they'll have... Unless he has suddenly gets a shoulder problem, they'll have to deal with 2017, too. So maybe by then they would decide before the season, we can't deal with this, and then cut him. But at this point, you're looking at, going back to 2013, 60 starts of a 5 ERA and 62 homers.
Yeah, I'm thinking that for Game 5 of the 2012 ALDS, he, like, sold his soul to the devil.
R.I.P.
Because that was it. After that, he was finished.
Someone somewhere yells that it wasn't a big enough game to do it in.
Yes. Should have saved.
So I just got really excited and thought I found Danny Almonte on the Sugar Land Steeders. It was actually Denny Almonte.
Oh, that is not the same thing. Man.
Yeah, so that's the thing. I just can't imagine him sticking with him for the entire length of his contract. I don't even see him sticking with him all of next year, to be honest, because how long do you justify that?
Yeah.
Before it just becomes like theater of the absurd.
Like, they're just running him out there, hoping that he can turn it around, but it's just not happening. Like, every now and then he'll throw in an okay start, but for the most part it's just like, goes out, gets bombed in one inning or two, and then it's just like, oh, okay, I guess the Yankees are losing this game.
And then it's pretty much only against like lefty heavy lineups, because against righties it's basically like everybody's Babe Ruth.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's unfortunate that the Yankees are going to have to turn to CC Sabathia to try to win this series against the Red Sox tomorrow, but the alternative is pitching him against the Blue Jays. Which, good lord.
Yeah.
Can you imagine CeCe Sabathia facing a lineup with, you know, Tulo, Donaldson, Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion? That's not fair.
He just wears, like, a white flag t-shirt.
They run him up the flagpole.
Yeah, I can't even imagine them making him into, like, a Luigi. Like, I feel like if they're going to cut him, they're just going to get rid of him. They're not going to try to convert him to the bullpen.
Yeah, because he's not going to be good in the bullpen. And, like, he just doesn't really have, like, the kind of repertoire for someone that probably would do well. I mean, maybe they would try him for a little bit, but I don't see it. And... I mean, at this point, they probably should. There's no point to keep running him out there in the rotation, because it's not looking good, so... But it's not what's going to happen.
So do you think when they say they haven't even discussed moving into the bullpen, do you think that's baloney?
Probably. I mean, or maybe, like, unless, like, Hal is dictated, no, he's going to be a starter because they're paying him to be a starter. In which case, that would be dumb, but, you know...
Wouldn't be, like, completely out of the ordinary for Hal Steinbrenner to say that?
Nope. I mean, we don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but...
I can understand him being sort of like an icon player to have on the team, but eventually people just start hating him.
Yeah, and he doesn't have, like, the Jeter cash where he can, like, get away with it because he's, like, Yankee legend. He was just a really good player on their last World Series team and a guy who was on their last few playoff teams as well. But for most fans, that's ancient history. They're not going to be like, oh, no, no, it's CeCe Sabathia. Yeah, it's fine. Just keep running him out there. His teammates might, because teammates, I'm sure, love him. They look up to him a lot, but you got to draw the line somewhere, right?
Yeah, and it's sad, because I'd say there's a good chance he's like a future Hall of Fame player, too.
Mm-hmm. Well,
at least a decent chance.
He has like an up and down case. There is a borderline case to be made, and that says enough already there.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's ugly. It's so ugly. At least Joe Girardi has seemingly finally reached the point where he's like, okay, I guess I'm not gonna have CeCe Sabathia automatically throw 100 pitches in every start now.
It's like he has to get through the sixth no matter what.
Yeah, well, you know, I feel like he's been moving away from that recently, though. Like, he's had a quicker hook with him, and that's obviously, that's very baby steps toward what ultimately has to be done. But I guess it's something in the right direction. Then you have starts, like, both of the last two, where he's given up 5 runs, and it's, you know, Yankees had to come from behind in Minnesota, and then they tried to come from behind in Texas, and they couldn't win that game, so... It's just hard to win those games when you're constantly digging yourself this, like, big hole from the starting pitcher.
That's what happens when you use them to win a World Championship. You gotta pay the piper eventually.
So, tune in live tomorrow night on Yes.
For CeCe Sabathia against the Boston Red Sox.
In 2015.
Mm-hmm. Hey, maybe he can get David Ortiz out. Probably not, though.
He's a lefty, so maybe.
Maybe. He'll have a better chance, but him against, like, you know, Hanram and Sandoval and whoever they can throw up there, I'm not feeling great about. Oh, well. At least that's, like, just the one starter out of 5. And Eovaldi has pitched very well. I would say over the past month or so.
Yeah.
Pretty much since that blowout in Miami.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, everything's been pretty much on point. He's used the splitter. He's located the fastball. Yeah, he's really limited the damage.
Mm-hmm. And you now see, like, you know, he's still lighting up the radar gun, but he's been able to mix in the pitches a lot more and make it a better combination, really command it more, so... You sort of see him evolving evolving over the course of the season. And that's the end of the podcast. Because that was terrible. It just cuts off immediately after I say evolving. Mew!
This has been Sharp Alley. We do puns.
iTunes just yanks the podcast.
We cannot stand for this.
But, yeah, Evaldi's been pitching very well lately. Nova is... He is Nova. The Nova that we always knew. Kind of inconsistent. And he has the Tommy John inconsistency to add to that. He was pretty good in his last start. Not so good in the few starts before then. So...
Good in his first start.
Yeah, so maybe he's... Yeah, I mean, I trust him more than CeCe at this point, but boy, is that a low bar. Other than that, it's, you know, Severino, who just made his first start, and Tanaka, who I still trust pretty well. So
it's like a Jenga tower rotation.
I mean, Nova's at a 127 ERA plus, so I would say on the whole he's been good. His FIP's a little high, but...
Yeah, no, I think he's been good. It's not a matter of how good he's been. Like, overall, he's been good. It's just the fact that it'll be, like, one lights-out, like, ace-level performance followed by him doing really poorly or him struggling mightily. It's not at all consistent whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the plus is still that they have the bullpen of doom for... Not Tigers brand bullpen of doom. Like, good doom. With, you know, Miller, Betances, Shreve, Wilson, Warren, and... And it does seem that whenever, like, they want to rotate in one of these random AAA guys, they all look pretty good, too. Like, Pinder, Mitchell, Rumbelo, Goody, they've all looked good in their brief appearances, I would say, mostly.
And they're all throwing gas, and every single one of them throws, like, 95.
Yeah. I mean, they even got the lucky Diego Moreno 5 1/3 hitless innings before... He kind of died.
And he also sold his soul to the devil.
It's kind of like Sergio Santos after that. He got out of that bases loaded, exactly. No one out, and then he never pitched again.
Please, Satan, allow me to have one good outing.
So, yeah, I mean, that sounds about right. But, so, it does seem like as long as the offense can carry them, and the pitching is just good enough, then the bullpen can hold out these leads, and they're really going to need some help going down the stretch because, you know, trade deadline, we should probably talk about what that other team in the division that's really close, that's really inching up on the Yankees is doing. Blue Jays, just Alex Anthopoulos being like, well, I might get fired anyway, so let's just throw all the chips into the middle of the table. We're going to trade for David Price. We're going to trade for Troy Tulowitzki. And we're going to get... the Troy Hawkins, just because we can, Ben Revere. So
he's like grabbing chips from other players' tests and moving on with them too.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I'm everything.
He's like borrowing chips from other people. He's like, come on, I just need a little bit more. Actually, I can go in more.
I think it's insane. I mean, it could work, but I think it's also insane. I know he doesn't care, but it's crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, if they don't make the playoffs, and then Price is gone, and I mean, it all depends on how good Tulo is in the future, but if Tulo continues to decline, it just looks like a disaster. But I don't know if he declines that quickly. It's just they've traded pretty much every good young player they've had for an older good, an older above average player.
I mean, the Blue Jays have the longest playoff drought, so I'm sure the fans don't mind that much, but...
No.
Exactly.
This could backfire in their face largely in a couple years, but...
Yeah, because the thing is, like, the Royals could have done that too. The Royals could have said, you know what, like, we haven't been in the playoffs in 20 years, let's just trade all of our top prospects from 2011 to 12 and trade them for really good players. They really didn't do that. They only traded for James Shields and Wade Davis.
So, yeah, Wade Davis, this guy is okay, I guess.
So they didn't really put that. They didn't really. Yeah, they basically said like we're gonna stick with the guys we have because we know it gives us the best chance to compete in like a window. While the Blue Jays are just like, well, let's just get every player that we can, and they essentially gave up like you know Syndergaard and Darnold, and now it's like Norris and Hoffman.
They do. I mean, they do have some people left in that system, but it is. I think they're talking about on. It's either on the Baseball America podcast or. the Raw Projection Baseball Prospectus podcast. They're talking about, like, I think they traded, like, something 12 pitchers or something ridiculous like that. And
like, their rotation is not even good. Like, the rotation is bad.
No. I mean, that's why they needed to trade for David Price, because, you know, other than that, they had, like, aged Mark Burley at the top of it.
Mark Burley's not bad, but he's, like...
Yeah, no, but he's, like, not, like, your top of the rotation starter in 2015.
So, I think the Blue Jays will give the Yankees a decent, like, run for their money. I do not see them pass them, just because the pitching is just dreadful. And, not to mention, their history of injuries cannot be forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible that Tulo pulls something and ends up on the DL. That's just what Tulo does. Now, if Tulo is able to stay healthy, then he could be a huge difference maker just because he's that transcendent a player. He's, like... When healthy, I think he's one of the five best players in baseball.
Yeah,
so.
I think Josh Donaldson, too.
Mm-hmm. And when you have Josh Donaldson in there, too, just, oh, by the way.
I mean, that was the one trade that made a lot of sense, because they didn't really give up anything.
Oh, completely. I still don't understand that trade, but whatever.
I mean, I don't think they're upset they don't have Brett Laurie on the team anymore.
It's weird that their outfield is kind of, like, still nothing, though, other than Bautista.
Like, Revere and,
yeah, like, I guess Revere is an upgrade from what they were throwing out there, but, like, the left fielder with the most starts for them this year is Chris Colabello.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And they've also had, like, Justin Smoke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Justin Smoke's on that team. Of course, you know, as I just said that, Chris Colabello is a 135 OPS plus somehow, but, you know, that's not continuing. Justin Smoke's even decent. But,
yeah, it's funny, they have, like, a few stars, but they have, like, a few, like, total black holes. Like, mm-hmm. Second base, line balance is not good at all.
Yeah, well, and Devon Travis got hurt. He had gotten off to a great start. I think this might just be confirmation bias, but I think Russell Martin has cooled off a little bit from his hot start, which is so unfamiliar. That definitely doesn't sound familiar to Yankees fans at all.
Best shape of his life.
He is in the best shape of his life. They are making paintings out of his shape right now. So on May 9th, he had an OPS over 1,000, and since then, he is hitting 242. 315, 414. Which I guess from a catcher isn't bad, but still.
Yeah, I've always thought the whole Russell Martin thing was a little bit overrated. Like, he had a couple of really good years, but I think he's gonna, like, come down hard.
Oh, yeah. Like, I didn't think he was that much better than, like, Brian McCann. And
I think we've seen enough of of Russell Martin to know that I think that him hitting, like, 40% better than league average is kind of an illusion.
Mm-hmm. And he was also doing, like, a billion walks last year, too, I think.
And he'll also be in, like, his age 33 season next year, and mm-hmm. the pitch framing is going to start to tank pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. But
so have fun with that.
Yep. But either way, there's, regardless of the Blue Jays' hopes from 2016 onward, in 2015, right now, these next 2 months, it's gonna be a tough road for the Yankees to stave them off. And the Orioles are still hanging around in this too somehow, because I think the Orioles' true talent level, it's kind of interesting. It feels like. When they made the playoffs in their big playoff runs the last 2 years, in 2012 and 2014, it did feel like they were overperforming. And this year, it feels like they should be better, but they're not. So maybe that's just, like, kind of luck catching up to them or something like that.
I guess. I never was a huge fan of their team. I never really thought they were constructed as, like, this great playoff team. I mean, like, they were always relying on, like, these weird Steve Pierce, Jimmy Paredes, like Jonathan Scope performances, and I don't understand
how Jimmy Paredes being relevant is a thing.
and like Caleb Joseph, like, I don't think these things are real, and I don't think they're gonna last. So that's why this stuff doesn't last, is because they sign these guys on the waiver wire that are decent, like, they're decent, but they're the guys who sign, like, the Yankees with something like Chris Young, and it works out. Like, those are the type of signings that you do. Not like, oh, we're going to sign, you know, Steve Pierce in the waiver wire, and he's going to be our starting, like, a starting player.
It's weird. They do that a lot. They sign a lot of these random guys, and, like, you hear about the ones that work out a lot, but then for all the, you know, the Delmon Youngs, like, last year Delmon Young, and Steve Pierce, they're, you know, they brought in Everett Cabrera, who did nothing. They brought in Chris Parmalee, who did nothing. David Lowe hasn't really done
Brian
much.
Brian LaVarnway.
Brian LaVarnway is awesome for OPS Plus.
Fierce.
He's with the Orioles.
Yeah.
Four.
And then, like, he has, like, Travis Snyder and Ryan Flaherty. Mm-hmm. Just doesn't, that stuff just doesn't work, you know,
also,
sustainably.
Also, we gotta say, mea culpa, I thought that if he had become a free agent, J.J. Hardy would have been a good free agent signing for the Yankees to make at shortstop, but he has, although his OPS Plus is very nice at 69, in reality, that sucks.
And DD's actually better.
Yeah, that's kind of shocking, isn't it?
I mean, even if they're the same, even if you believe that they're the same talent level, you can believe that Gregorius is going to get better, or mm-hmm. at least become more consistent.
Oh, yeah, sure, and he's only in his mid-20s, and J.J. Hardy just, I think, turned 32 this year. So.
Yeah, again, have fun with that.
Yep. Yeah, right now, I think the Orioles are being kept in this race because Manny Machado is a ridiculously good baseball player, and Adam Jones and Chris Davis are playing pretty well as well. So. And that, you know, they're getting their randomly good performances of the year from the likes of Jimmy Paredes and Caleb Joseph, so. But, again, that's another one where you look at their starting rotation and you're like, oh my god. Like, for a while, I think Ubaldo was their best starter. And then I think he kind of hit the regression train.
Well, I guess Wei-Yin Chen.
Oh, yeah, on the season, it's been Wei-Yin Chen. I think at one point, Ubaldo was doing okay, but Tillman has not been as good as he has been in years past. And Gausman's only been okay. So.
Bud Norris.
I'm gonna miss Bud Norris. He was a lot of fun.
And a moment of silence for the career of Dylan Bundy.
Oh my god, that's like the most depressing thing. Pitchers, man. Wasn't Dylan Bundy like advised not to pitch again this year, but not to have surgery yet again or something?
Yeah, he was
like
shut
that.
Down. He was shut down with tendonitis.
Yay.
So.
Chaz Rowe's yeah. out here with the 138 ERA plus for the Orioles.
I like that on his, on his baseball reference page, Dylan Bundy, like in 2012 he was called up at the very end of the season just for like a cup of coffee and he was only 19 years old. And that's his only season right now in the big leagues. So he's one season when he's like 19, pitched two games. It looks like an 1880s baseball reference page. Yeah, we found him, we brought him up from the local college team. Had him pitch a few innings here and there. And then we never saw him again. I think he heard he went to dental school.
Wouldn't be surprised if Dylan Bundy. I think he should start learning the trade.
Yeah. Man. But.
No, there's no such thing as Orioles pitching prospects.
No, you have to go to the Cubs.
That's true.
So, I mean, the one saving grace is that, like, about the Yankees right now, they're not perfect, but hey, the division's not perfect either. And the offense still seems to be pretty fearsome. I mean, what was the stat that, I'm not sure who tweeted out, but it was like they scored 90 runs in the past 10 games?
Yeah, I think that's right. Well, that probably was before this game.
Yeah, so, okay, so I guess it'd be, I don't know, 80-something in the past 10 games, but still. I think
91 and 11 still pretty decent.
Yes, yes. Well, DFA. Just to be safe. DFA someone.
The only thing makes me nervous is how sustainable is this, just because you're still relying on, you know, A-Rod and Teixeira, and while I do think they're better than a lot of us thought, they're still old. They still could get injured. They still could slow down and get tired.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a reason. There's a reason we didn't really expect Teixeira to put up an OPS plus of over 150 or something like that.
Yeah, he's having like the best offensive career, like the best offensive year of his career.
Well, yeah, like I think I saw the Yankees Twitter account said that like he was on pace for 45 homers, which would be a career high. Like, we're talking even better than he was, like, on the Angels or the Rangers or anything like that.
True. That's why I don't know if this sustained itself to the extent, because if it doesn't, they're dead ducks.
Yeah, well, I guess that's what they're hoping, that Headley can get hot, and he has been hot despite, you know, tonight was not a great night for Chase Headley, but July was a pretty awesome month. I think he hit like 380 or something crazy like that. And it does seem like traditionally throughout his career, he's been a pretty good second half player. I don't know if that's like something, how much you can actually bank on that. Oh God, I just made a Sterling reference, didn't I? I don't know how much you can actually trust into that, but maybe it's just the way with some players. They're better in the second half than the first.
Yeah, I have no idea. I wouldn't even know to begin with that theory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because some people would say you're better in the first half because you're fresher, or you're better in the second half because you're, you know, you're used to the little aching pains and the weather's nicer, and I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's pretty weird, but... I mean, Brian McCann, still hitting pretty well. I think he's having his best season in a few years right now, so...
I'm not going to lie, I did not realize that Carlos Beltran had a 106 or OPS plus.
Yeah, he sneaks up like that, doesn't he? Like, I think last year he had his OPS plus ended up around 100, too, even though it felt like he was awful all year.
I guess, but the thing is, 106 is still kind of awful.
Yeah, I mean, when you factor in his defense, it's not good, but...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, he's there. I guess it's more than what he was doing earlier in the season, so... Thanks, I guess. He did hit the home run today off the knuckleball. The only person to do anything.
And he's still a better defensive outfielder than Henry Ramirez.
Oh my god. I love Jesse Spector's tweet where it's like, Henry Ramirez looks like that guy in Little League who does not want anything hit to him.
What was that ball? There was a hit that was hit in front of him tonight, and he like doesn't take any path to the ball. He like runs forward. And then, like, the second the ball comes, he stops, like, midway, and the ball
just
drops in front of him.
Yeah, I was, like, watching that. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, like, oh, that's a normal flyout. Like, look away. Then you're like, oh, wait, no, that's Hanley. That's going to drop in. And it did.
He is performance art. I think they could certainly start getting some better production on Jacoby Ellsbury soon, too. Because he's been in a bit of a slump since he returned from the DL. Granted, he's, like... I think he's kind of running some kind of unfortunate timing there, and he's not... I mean, he's not making a lot of strong contact, but his BABIP's also, like, 220 or something crazy like that. So that's going to correct itself soon. So maybe they'll be able to get, like, a hot month from him at some point. And when Jacoby Ellsbury is hot, we saw that earlier in the season with him and Gardner back-to-back. That could be pretty terrific. So it's just about if Teixeira and A-Rod cool off a little bit, do they have enough pieces on the offense to stay hot?
Yeah, I don't know. They'll just have to keep it hot for just a little bit longer. They've done it for... They've been pretty good, even through spring training, so they can just keep it going for just a little while longer.
Yeah. I mean, they've hit 144 homers all year long, and that's... I feel like that's already pretty close to their total for, like, 2013 or 14.
I think it is pretty close. Yeah, I'm curious.
Yeah, no, I'm joking.
They hit 144 in 2013.
Seriously?
You're telling me Alberto Gonzalez didn't chip in with 20 home runs in 2013?
You know, I don't think so.
Huh.
Well, they hit 147 homers last year, so with Beltrons tonight, they're two away from that.
Okay. That in that year, the Marlins hit 95.
Jeez.
that's with Giancarlo.
Yeah. So non-Giancarlo home runs were probably like 50. He only hit 24 that year. He was hurt.
We need to get to the Dustin Ackley era.
Do we even need to talk about Dustin Ackley that much? He's here.
He's legend, Dustin Ackley.
Who knows if he's coming back?
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose we should talk about Dustin Ackley a little bit. I mean, there's not much to say, just because, you know, they traded for him. He played some mop-up time in Chicago, and then he went on the DL with a kind of back injury. And we might not see him until September, if that. But I kind of agree with, I think it was Chad Jennings of the Lohud Journal, whatever, wrote the other day about Ackley I think it was more of a move designed for the next couple years, maybe, than this year in particular, though it would have been a nice bonus if he did anything. Because if they can make him into, like, some sort of Martin Prado-esque utility guy, then, yeah, that could be a useful player. Granted, you know, he needs to hit and not do what he's been doing in Seattle for the past couple years.
That'd be nice. Because he's been pretty terrible.
Number two overall pick.
I just don't know. Maybe it's just the prospect sheen has not worn off. Or maybe it was something like the hit velo type of thing. But I just don't know what they saw that they felt like, yeah, we could turn him around. Unless they felt like it was really just all about flexibility and him doing better was kind of just a plus.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. Or maybe they saw something in like their internal statistics like they saw with Chris Young. I don't know.
It's possible.
Yeah. I mean, you can never really rule it out. And they have been interested in him for a few years now, so.
They didn't lose him for a while. They tried to get him last year.
Yeah, apparently they tried to get him in 2013, in the offseason as well. So.
And Jack C just would not give up on him.
It's like, no! You will give me Greg Bird for Dustin Ackley. No. Oh, well. So that is the Yankees trade deadline edition. Guy's broken already, but hey, Garrett Jones is DFA'd, now he's back.
That's pretty awkward.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, we were about to get rid of you, but hey, you want to come back? He's like, sure. I mean, I'm trying to like justify in my mind, maybe like they saw something with like his lefty swing that they like for Yankee Stadium, but I mean, I guess at this point you just have to go like, throw up the arms and say maybe they know something and say whatever. They didn't give up anything of worth really for him. So,
unless you're very invested in Ramon Flores, which some people are.
Yeah, because the Yankees don't have enough like quad A type outfielders hovering around.
Yeah, I really don't care about this trade because like I'm not gonna miss Jose Ramirez or Ramon Flores. Like I don't care.
Mm-hmm. Like I think both of them could eventually turn into like decent role players, but like. Yeah, that's not really someone you like. you say I'm never gonna part with these guys.
Yeah.
So, I guess we kind of covered all of the stuff that we're gonna talk about, right?
Yeah, I think we did.
Yeah.
I can touch a little bit. I went to the Scranton game for the first time. I hadn't been to the Scranton Field before, so. That was a fun experience, even though Greg Bird did not play and Aaron Judge only DH'd. But I would say had a pretty good time. What do you think, Matt F?
Yeah, like we had a fun time.
Yep, got a pierogi sandwich thing.
That was delicious.
The walking taco was.
I can't imagine that was delicious.
That was. Have you heard tell of the walking taco, Matt Provenzano?
No, I've never heard of that.
Well, so they gave you, like, this bag of, like, nacho chips, and then they, like, took a, like, a scoop of, like, ground beef and dropped it in the bag, and then were, like, cheese and salsa and all of the stuff that you would put on a nacho into the bag, and then they give you the bag and a fork. It was, like, the most depressing thing I've eaten since, like, college, definitely.
That sounds terrible.
And it definitely looks like something that a college intern thought of and brought, yeah. Like, to the people at Scranton. They're like, you know, this is what we did, like, this is what we did in the dorm room when we were, like, high as fuck. and apparently they're like, yeah, we'll roll with that.
I'd say about 75% of decisions made in minor league ballparks were made by a minor league intern.
Oh, probably. It was weird, but whatever. I mean, the rest of the food was fine. But I like, though, is Greg made a great point. It's like, well, you know, they call it the walking taco, but, like, tacos are, like, portable anyway. They're not really a food that, like, you have to sit down to eat. Whatever. I'm not even gonna try to like mentally justify it. It happened.
It's just like a taco, but like instead of a bag, that's it.
Yeah, and like no taco shell. They're just like
I
the
guess
inside
that,
of
I
a
guess
taco.
That the reason why they call it that is because you can't lose any of the toppings. It just stays inside of a bag.
I guess it's Very minor league, that's all I can say.
It's bush league stuff.
Yeah, but we saw Kyle Haynes pitch. Not Chris Stewart. Kyle Haynes was the results. Was the thing with the pulse that the Pirates gave the Yankees in exchange for Chris Stewart. And you know, he hasn't been that bad of a minor league pitcher, but he did not pitch well at all. I think he gave up like what, 6 runs in the first 2 innings?
That yeah, right? Yeah, he gave up 5 in the first 2 innings.
Yeah. And then the Railroaders were playing catch up for the rest of the game, and they got within 1 run, but didn't end up winning. But the way they got the runs was pretty exciting. Gary Sanchez murdered a baseball. Yeah, like there's the wall there's the outfield wall, then there's the like bullpen wall behind the wall, then there's like the billboards that are up behind the wall, and he hit it over the billboards.
Behind a walkway, like a 30-foot walkway behind the bullpens.
Yeah.
That was like 460.
Yeah, something crazy like that. It was just like, oh, okay. So.
Well, Gary Sanchez might be good.
That is, I guess that is like 60 grade, 65 grade power, whatever Sanchez has.
So.
That's his best asset, so.
Hypothetically here, let's say Gary Sanchez makes the big leagues and he's good. Where does he play?
I guess. I don't know. Like, right now, they, like, literally don't have a spot for him. It's kind of like in 2011 with Jesus Montero. And I think people still have problems with him defensively. I think they've said he has improved, and, like, this time they think he actually has improved. They're not just saying it just to say it. Though maybe we're all suckers. But I don't know. I guess he's in kind of a bench role where maybe he plays a little bit first base, too. Maybe. I don't know. He's not a very flexible guy.
No. It's like first base, DH, catcher.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, like, the thing was, some people thought, like, oh, you could move McCann to first base and put Sanchez behind the plate, but, like, Bird's eclipsed Sanchez as a prospect, so.
Oh, yeah.
Can't really do that now.
Nope. I think right now all he's doing is improving his trade stock. I think there's a... I would say at this point there's a pretty decent chance he gets moved in the offseason. Just because they don't really have a spot for him. Unless someone is really into John Ryan Murphy and they decide to move him, then maybe they'd try Sanchez as McCann's backup. But with the situation as it is right now, if they find a decent trade package for in exchange for Gary Sanchez, maybe for a decent starter, then I think they might pull the trigger on that. But they have no reason to just make the trade. Like, I'm glad that they turned down Cameron Maben for Gary Sanchez, because Cameron Maben has no spot on this team.
But the fact that he's even gotten to the point where that's the negotiation is Cameron Maben. Mm-hmm. Like, a year ago, we'd even think that that's too much. We'd be like, Gary Sanchez is like a high A catcher with no defense who like hasn't really hit. And that Cameron Maben is at least, like, a major league baseball player.
Yeah, so, Sanchez has had a great comeback year.
So. He does really well the rest of the season, and maybe the following season has some playing time, then maybe goes from Cameron Maben up to something else even better, something the Yankees actually need.
Yeah, maybe even. So, definitely good stuff happening there. And, of course, we saw Aaron Judge with, like, one of the hardest hit home runs I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's like a missile to above center field wall.
Thing is, I didn't, like, which I went as far as Sanchez's, but also you can't measure, like, balls that go into the ground. Like, that's, like, tunneling through mountains of northeastern Pennsylvania right now.
Yeah, it's kind of like in backyard baseball when you hit the undergrounder, except it went over the fence in the process, too.
Yeah.
Cool, man.
It's somewhere in the Poconos right now.
Mm-hmm. I didn't see Aaron Judge in Trenton. He wasn't in Trenton until this year. I saw Greg Bird in Trenton, and Greg Bird didn't do anything. Because I'm not Tanya.
The game I went to earlier this year, I saw both of them play, and either of them did anything.
He was just waiting for a bigger crowd to show off, I think.
Yeah. Oh, and we got triples from Rust Knight, or and Slade.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's right, Slade was making his one of his minor league games there, and Ref Snyder got a nice hit, but I feel like he did something weird in the field too.
Yeah.
Which kind of has been the trend for him ever since. Well, I mean, that's been the trend for him forever. But like, you know, after that first month of the season, he got in a little bit of a role, and then that ended with him getting promoted for a few days. But apparently, like, since he's been back down, those same problems have come back up again. So I don't really know what to make of Russ Snyder at this point. It's a little frustrating.
We'll really have an idea what they do, you know, for early next season. Because I'm under the impression they're just fine making do with what they have for the rest of the season. I guess when you're in first place, like, you can do that. Mm-hmm. But next year, they're going to have a plan for what they're going to do for second base, and it can't be, like, re-sign Stephen Drew.
No.
So, but if they really just, like, sign some waiver wire dumpy player to play second base, then we know that, like, Rob Refsnyder is, like, pretty much not going to be on the team. Or is not going to be, you know, not going to be relied upon.
No, yeah, you're right. I mean, at that point, then he'll have had, like, a full year and a half in AAA. And I don't think the second base defense would spontaneously get much better. So yeah, I mean, yeah, the clock is ticking faster on Russ Snyder than I think we might consider, but that's just who he is right now. I mean, they're using a platoon of Stephen Drew and Brendan Ryan over him. And granted, that duo did have a nice series or two. They had a nice road trip recently, and you know, good for them, but. In a perfect world, Ref Snyder would already be up and like doing stuff, but it doesn't seem like that's gonna happen until September. I don't see him coming back up until then unless he gets hurt, which is unfortunate. But so it goes.
I mean, if he's like taken like the demotion or like this like badly and is playing that bad in the field, like that's not a good sign either.
No.
But like. It's fine if you're like a confidence player, but you're not always going to be confident.
If he makes the major leagues, he's going to deal with more bad stuff from like the fans and fielding people getting him down. Any slumps, you know. All right, so that's kind of the AAA report, one game sample size, but you know. Now we can go into the tweet bag. With the Yankees going after Kimbrel / Chapman at the deadline, wouldn't it have made sense to sign Robertson and Miller? One of you want to tackle this?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't fully get, like, I mean, I wouldn't say no to, like, Aroldis Chapman being on the Yankees or Craig Kimbrel, but I didn't really see the need to go after either one of them. But as for the other part, I mean, like, Robertson signed a big contract, so it's not like it's easy to say, like, oh yeah, just re-sign Robertson, but like, I don't know. It's a lot of money as whereas.
White Sox threw, I think, $45 million at him?
Yeah.
4 years, $46 million. And, you know, he's been good for them this year, so good for them, but I think the Yankees kind of proved early on in the season why they didn't need to re-sign Robertson when they signed Miller, because you know how you had Chase and Shreve come out of almost nowhere to be pretty good. They had Adam Warren later step in. Justin Wilson's been steady. Granted, again, they're not like as good as David Robertson, but you know, few relievers in baseball are. But that's why David Robertson got that much money. And I don't think you can really compare the situation from the offseason to the situation at the deadline, because things changed, and with the deal with the Padres, I was not really a huge guy or a huge believer in going after like a Chapman or a Kimbrel, just because the Yankees bullpen was tremendous already, and for Chapman you definitely have to give up something good. I mean, the Braves didn't even end up trading him, and with Kimbrel, you know, they were talking about, I wouldn't have done, like, Mateo for Kimbrel straight up, because I think even though there's a, I'm sure there's a very strong chance that even though Mateo's a great prospect, that he never really amounts to much in the major leagues, but you don't really need to trade an asset that valuable for a guy who doesn't really improve your playoff odds all that much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, but at the same time, I just wouldn't have cared because he's just so far off the major leagues, but, like, I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't sound like, it doesn't sound like Preller.
It would have been, like, a whatever one for me, but, whereas, like, other ones that were...
Yeah.
Like, trading, like, I guess, like, whatever you want to call it. Like, or, like, Bird and Judge and Severino, I would have been probably upset unless it were... For people who are, like, I guess, speculating that they might trade them for, but, like, Mateo for Kimbrel, like, I would have gone over that one way faster than any other one.
Yeah, I would have gotten over it, but I would have been a little irked by it just because it's. If they were going out to improve something and they went out to improve, like, the best part of their team, that would be kind of weird. I know Kimbrel's Kimbrel, but.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah.
But your bullpen isn't really going to make a difference, and CeCe Sabathia is going out there coughing up like 5 runs immediately. So, like in the off season, I was fine. I got over like letting Robertson go and signing Miller. I think that worked out. That's worked out fine, and I think it's also worked out fine that they didn't end up acquiring Kimbrel.
Except for the fact that their pick that they got for Dave Robertson, Kyle Holder, has been a disaster so far.
Yeah, but it's still pretty early.
It is early, but a 500 OPS and short season ball.
He's just biding his time, you know. Yeah, I mean, I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt on the Kyle Holder thing. We'll see how he's doing like next year around this time. If he's still like hitting this terribly, then yeah, I'll be pretty concerned. But like,
he turns into like Cito Culver, basically.
It turns into Cito goes to college. Maybe he's the replacement for Cito.
Cito's heir apparent.
Yeah. I thought it was cool that they promoted Mateo to Tampa and Wade to Trenton the other day.
Yeah, that was definitely... I was expecting that. Just because it's so easy, because it feels such an easy need. On both ends.
Made a lot of sense, because Mateo was hitting pretty well in Charleston. You know, he had 71 steals already. I love how ridiculous those low minors stolen base totals can get, because catchers like just can't deal with 80 grade speed at all, and the pitchers don't know how to hold them on either.
And I saw Wade in Tampa like a month ago, and he definitely looked like he was ready for the next level. I mean, you could pretty much tell he was ready to make that jump.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
I think they both have work to do defensively, though they both do have decent defensive ceilings, but they both still do have work defensively. That's fine. I mean, that's why they're in the low minors. That's why Tyler Wade is 20. That's why Jorge Mateo just turned 20 on June 23rd. So.
Yeah, I just don't. The only thing with Mateo is I just don't see him hitting.
Yeah, like
the steals are great, but the hit tool is just not there yet at all.
Mm-hmm. He had a good debut.
Certainly. That's definitely a step in our direction.
I think he went like 4-for-6 with a triple.
I just think offense speed is so sexy, but, you know, it doesn't play if he can't get on base.
Mm. No, it's true. I mean, that's the Billy Hamilton problem. Billy Hamilton has, like, leads the majors in steals, but he also has the lowest OPS among all regulars. I think we're going to look back eventually and be like, huh, Billy Hamilton led the major leagues in stolen bases in 2015. He had 51 steals, and he wasn't named an All-Star. Why is that? Oh, right, because his OPS is 554.
Because that's all he does.
Yeah, that's it.
And the second his speed starts to go south, which is, like, going to be pretty soon, he's going to get really bad.
Oh, yeah.
Like he has, like, a shelf life of maybe, like, three or four more years. That's it, if he's lucky.
No, yeah, you're right. So, yeah, Mateo's definitely got some work to do. I do like what he can offer, but we'll see. I mean, if he can offer quality shortstop defense, then maybe that can help compensate that, but whatever. I guess we're dealing with hypotheticals a couple years down the line. We'll see how they do, and, like, we'll see how both Wade and Mateo do at the higher levels. I think, obviously, that jump from high A to double A, I think that's the biggest jump in the entire minors.
Yeah.
Aside from actually jumping to the major leagues, so it'll be kind of curious to see how Wade handles that, because it hasn't been the jump has not been terribly kind to Mark Payton.
No.
Not that we should be that surprised by that, I guess, because Mark Payton was kind of playing over his head a little bit, and now he's just okay in Trenton, but a little off track there, but that's okay. All right, more in the tweet bag. Long-time listener asked, was Severino's perfect game the greatest debut in sports history? Oh, wait, I didn't need to ask this question, because in case Severino doesn't pitch a perfect game. So, maybe he could have been perfect if not for Chase Headley, but...
Definitely
the game was perfect in my mind.
Exactly.
It was definitely one of the... It definitely was a great debut. A lot of pitchers have nothing close to that.
Oh, yeah. He didn't walk anyone. I think he really only made one mistake, and that was the really bad pitch that they did with Ortiz. But and even like the pitch that was hit that scored whoever reached on the error, I think was a decent pitch if I recall correctly. But
the fact that he didn't walk anyone is especially impressive, considering how the Red Sox kept battling him to full counts. The fact that he never actually fourth ball, that's pretty good. I was really impressed by that.
Yeah, they kept talking about how the people in AAA raved about his mound presence, and that can tend to be one of those intangible things that's really hard to measure that sometimes people can roll their eyes out. Yeah, I think you could really see him on the mound, and he was just dealing, he wasn't going to give in to hitters, and he got a lot of strikeouts because of it too. All right, next from Sirius Rooney. Is it time for someone in coaching staff to take some time with Headley? He really has been messing up his throws the first. Only because of Tex, he hasn't had more errors than his numbers have shown. Should the Yankees work with him to identify the issue and fix it before September and beyond? I mean, I don't think that's something that's going to get fixed instantaneously, and I don't think that's something that they've been ignoring either all season.
Yeah, I'm sure it's just something that you constantly work on. They're constantly making adjustments, every day you're out there, taking ground balls, and you have your infield, you have, what is it, Joe Espada's the infield coach, the infield coach is working on that pretty much every single day. So I'm sure that this has been talked about extensively between both of them, so I'm sure this isn't some big surprise.
And after that rough stretch early on in the season, he had a few good months there where he wasn't making as many of those errors, but... Yeah, it was unfortunate that it came back to bite him tonight, but I'm sure that the Yankees haven't been ignoring it or anything like that. So, you just gotta hope he adjusts, because I still think he is a good third baseman, so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that it's weird, because he'll make plays like that, but then he'll make a lot of, really solid plays.
Oh, yeah. Bizarre.
Yeah, I always forget about his high error count until he made an error. Just most of the time he was fine there. It's just all of a sudden bounce one out of nowhere. And you're huh, it's weird. Why is he doing that more this season?
All right. Next question from KShaw90. What are your favorite colors? Matt F.
Green, and then Carolina blue.
And what about you, Matt P?
Probably red, and I don't know if white's not a color, but I like red and white.
Gonna go with orange and blue. College colors. Just cause. Alright, that was a great question.
Yeah.
80 grade.
That was top 5 tweet-by question ever.
Probably, yeah. And last question from T-Cuz. What did you do with your lives before Luis Severino?
Waited for him to come up.
Well, I guess we're going back to before I had heard of him. Probably, I don't know. Reading too much about other guys who weren't nearly as exciting.
Yeah, and I remember the first time I read about him, and there was literally one video of him online.
Yeah, it was probably one that Kylie took or something.
It was one video that Josh Norris took in spring training 2013. Mm-hmm. And he was pretty filthy in that, very raw but filthy, and I was like, oh my god, he looks amazing. And I would try to read some of them, but there really was nothing about him. So I just sat and waited.
Mm-hmm. Well, at the beginning of 2014, when that was right before his breakout season last year, we had ranked him on Pinstripe Alley's top prospects as based on what we had heard and read and seen from videos, like the scant videos, we had him tied for the 11th best prospect in the organization with Jose Ramirez. So, which is kind of laughable at this point. And three behind Manny Banuelos, who was still recovering from Tommy John surgery. But and one spot have Rafael DePaula. So it's kind of funny how things can evolve in just a couple years. He, like, just shot up the system in 2014.
As someone who is, like, a pretty rudimentary knowledge of prospects, like, he sort of had, not totally out of nowhere, but, like, it has been a pretty rapid rise for him.
Well, yeah, Josh Norris was talking about, like, how he was just in the Gulf Coast League in July of 2013. 2013!
Yeah. Yeah, he went from literally unknown to global top 25 prospect in, like, 2 years.
Yeah. Let's see, what I said, although he's only made 4 starts above rookie ball, scouts are impressed by Severino's fastball-changeup combination, and his slider reportedly wasn't too bad either. Severino's a long way off, but his pure starting potential could be greater than anyone else in the system. Yep. Pretty much. That was the same year that we had, we had no idea how to rank Aaron Judge, because Judge, you know, like, didn't miss all of the season that he was drafted with that quad injury. And so we're like, 10th, maybe? Yeah, man. Anyway. Alright, so, now we can probably move toward the end of the podcast now. So, the Yankee and the Mitre of the Week. And this one's going out to Esmiel Rogers out in Korea. Good luck, buddy. All right, Matt P., who is your Yankee of the Week?
Mark Teixeira.
He is good at dingers.
He's hit 5 home runs the past week. Yeah, that's all you have to say.
Yeah. 5 home runs in a week is generally a plus. Or Matt F., your Yankee of the Week.
Luis Severino.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, it could have gotten a little better, but not much. Like, that was pretty close to as good of a start as we could have hoped for.
I mean, it's a pretty ideal debut. Again, like, the only huge mistake was the pitch to David Ortiz, so good work. Yeah. Please do it again in 4 days. Who would be his next opponent? Let's see. I think he's not going to pitch in the Blue Jays series.
He wouldn't. I forget who's after that.
He will probably pitch Tuesday against the Indians in Cleveland.
Yes.
I like that matchup better. Okay, so my Yankee of the Week will be Brian McCann. He's had a pretty solid week, hit a couple homers as well. Had the great home run that made the amazing Breslow gif Tuesday night at this point. And with the Breslow's reaction of, hashtag pitcher gifs. And he's really been bringing it of late, and I had no problems pinch-hitting him in the ninth for Didi Gregorius, even though Gregorius has been decent lately as well. Though, not in the past week.
Rabble.
Yes, but rabble. You make a good point, PSA commenters. All right, Matt P., who is your Mitre of the Week?
My Mitre of the Week is Dustin Ackley.
Yeah. That's kind of deserved.
I was listening to the radio and they had Brian Cashman on. They were like, for who was interviewing, I think it may have been with Susan Wallman. And she was asking, you know, you traded for Dustin Ackley and what happened with the medicals? And he goes, oh yeah, he goes, he passed the physical and they were quote, clean as a whistle. So that means he was fine on July 31st and gets a herniated disc like a day later.
Yankees workouts are rigorous, man, you know?
Some stress test.
Yeah,
Seattle knew.
Yeah, that's true. We need to default to that. Alright, Matt F., who's your Mitre of the Week?
Dave Miley. For not playing Greg Bird.
And not pinch-hitting Greg Bird in the ninth inning, down one run.
To be fair, Cole Figueroa has had a good AAA season, and he's probably trying to win the game. Like, Cole Figueroa is good, but, like, I don't care about Cole Figueroa. Give us Greg Bird. One's there for Cole Figueroa.
I think Tanya's right. I think he was just too distraught from her not being there that he could not pinch it. He's in no shape. Oh, well. Let's see. My Mitre of the Week is... Ugh. You know, the easy answer is CeCe Sabathia, but I think he's kind of like a consensus pick just because he's so frustrating. So I'm going to have to point it to someone who I don't like pointing it to, but Brett Gardner has been terrible the last week. He's really slowed down lately, and it's kind of sad. I mean, I guess it was inevitable after, like, he had the great hot streak to get into the All-Star game, and then, like, he started off the second half pretty well. And, but just the past couple weeks have not really been pretty for Brett Gardner. Well, hopefully him and Ellsbear can get hot again, because... I like it better when they play well.
I don't think he could have played, like, top five outfielder in baseball forever.
Shh. All right. So, you guys have anything else to add?
The fan does, apparently.
Yeah, good. Okay. So, you can follow me on Twitter at MernsPSA. You can follow Matt F. on Twitter at MattF15. Follow Matt Provenzano on Twitter at MattProv94. You can follow our GIFs account at PSA_GIFs. And don't forget to follow Pinstripe Alley in general at Pinstripe Alley. And like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PinstripeAlley. And send us your questions in the tweet bag. Tweet at us. Always good to hear from you. And rate and review us on iTunes. So we're hoping that Luis Severino can keep up the good work from the first start. Hope the Yankees can continue to maintain their lead over the Blue Jays. We'll be back in a couple weeks or so. All right, have a good night.